Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, the vermin in the left-wing media. The vermin in the left-wing media are working overtime to make certain that you and your children are dead. They're now going after the CIA in a way that only the enemies of America could have dreamed. The ACLU is now working hand in glove with the Islamic Terrorist Network in order to undermine the CIA to a point that we will no longer be able to defend ourselves. Now, look, I'm a student of the immune system. In fact, my best-selling book was translated into six languages in 1988, I believe it was, called Maximum Immunity. And I studied the immune system. As you all know, we have white blood cells. Let's say you went to high school and you know about white blood cells. You cut yourself, the white blood cells increase in number. They rush to the site of the injury. And the white blood cells are internal defenders. What happens with a body when the white blood cells get wiped out is that any infection that may invade the body will proliferate to the extent that it will kill the body. The CIA, the police, the military should be seen as our white blood cells, to make it very simple. When you have an autoimmune disease where the body turns on itself and begins to kill its own defense cells, you have an animal or an organism that will die. Right now, the ACLU has given the United States of America AIDS, political AIDS. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? When you have psychotics in the ACLU attacking our white blood cells, i.e. the police, the military, the CIA now, what they're going to do is make this country unable to defend itself, open us up to a massive infection by an invading army or enemy, and we'll all die. And so therefore, when I say to you the vermin in the media are responsible for every problem we have, you know I'm right. The vermin on MSNBC. The Salenterates on MSNBC, hand in glove with the ACLU, hand in glove with the enemies of America, hand in glove with the Islamic fascists. They are your enemy. Make no mistake about it. They're fighting to destroy you. And if you think my being banned in Britain has no relationship to this, you're insane. I am the most outspoken person in talk radio. I am the most outspoken opponent of the New World Order. I am the most outspoken opponent of Gordon Brown. I am the most outspoken opponent of this very same left-wing rat, Gordon Brown, who just released the Lockerbie bomber. The very same Gordon Brown who released the Lockerbie bomber. Said so, he did so through his Scottish cohort, that he released the Lockerbie bomber for compassionate and merciful reasons. Well, I sent him a letter 2 months ago saying, your own emails say that Michael Savage has never encouraged violence. Michael Savage was put on a list to balance the inclusion list, the exclusion list. In other words, to not make the radical Muslims feel singled out. And yet you would not take my name off that list, Gordon Brown, would you? And so I sit here alone, Daniel in the lion's den. I have a number of different analogies. I am alone. I am alone on this. And the forces of evil, the vermin, who are now attacking the CIA because they feel so emboldened, because they have a top-flight character of their own in the White House named Barack Hussein Obama, because they now have coverage in the White House surrounded by thugs from the gutters of Oakland and the gutters of Chicago. They're now attacking the very white blood cells that would defend us, the CIA. What man or woman listening to this program right now would ever go to work for an intelligence agency having such rats as we have in the verminous media, and such rats as we have in the National Lawyers Guild and the ACLU, out of control right now because they are inside the White House. The enemies are in the gates. The enemies are in the White House. Make no mistake about it. We are ripe for the loss of our very freedom itself. And I said that to a reporter, Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times, who quoted me, and it's up on michaelsavage.com. Here you have a president who uses czars instead of appointed officers. Czars! Out of the Soviet Union, czars! Who gave a president the right to use czars? Who are these czars? Don't you people see what's happened here? Well, listen to what I say inside the Beltway in the Washington Times. I will read you what I said, Savage Reaction. Scotland's release of Lockerbie bomber Abdel Bassett al-Magiri continues to infuriate a spate of notables, including President Obama, yeah, right, FBI Director Robert S. Mueller III, and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Admiral Mullen, who are convinced that the decision was no humanitarian gesture, but a naive attempt to enhance trade between Britain and Libya that ultimately mocked justice. Talk radio host Michael Savage is particularly piqued, given that his name remains in a list of undesirables banned from Britain. Savage tells Beltway, quote, they put me on this list of murderers and terrorists as a political favor to Islamic nations, Mr. Savage tells Beltway. Shall I continue or are you bored of it? Would you rather not hear anymore? Would you rather hear about a golf game over the weekend? I don't play golf. I'll go on. And Michael Savage is still on the list even as al-Magiri goes free, he says. Savage's website was also compromised by unknown hackers Saturday, adding to his disquiet and a sense that the general public is not paying attention to the possible opening volleys of a war between East and West. Quote, Savage says, the public is blind, deaf, and dumb. The public is blind, deaf, and dumb. You want to read more? Go to michaelsavage.com. You can read more. And while you're there, check out my new book, Banned in Britain. That's right. And here's my question to you today. How can Gordon Brown release the Lockerbie bomber who was convicted of killing over 200 people and continue to keep Michael Savage in a list of so-called banned people, which includes actual murderers and terrorists? Where's the compassion and mercy that the Scottish judge spoke of? Where's the British justice system not permitting me to defend my name and reputation, not reviewing the emails of their own staff who wrote, quote, there is no evidence of Savage advocating or inciting violence, close quote. And by including Savage on this list of banned individuals, it would help, quote, provide a balance of types of exclusion cases, close quote. My friends, an innocent man has been wronged. Where is the justice and the mercy? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. We're also going to talk about the return of killer childhood illnesses as a result of the swamp, the flood, the running over of America by illegal aliens. If you don't like what I'm saying, prove me wrong. What you don't know is that there have been many illnesses that were considered to be wiped out, completely gone. And I want to talk about that today because I have a friend whose children have whooping cough. And it got me thinking about how in the United States over the course of the 20th century, most of the major childhood diseases were wiped out. Pertussis, measles, tuberculosis. This was a huge victory of science over 1,000 years of darkness. But over the past couple of decades, there's been a huge resurgence in these same diseases. Measles, which was declared eradicated in the year 2000, is now back with a vengeance. Progress against TB has slowed dramatically. But there has been a dramatic increase in the number of cases of whooping cough, over 10,000 cases in 2007 alone. Now, where did these diseases come from? The rise in these illnesses has coincided with a less restrictive immigration policy. The more illegals that come in, the more diseases your children are getting. And while the government might like to have you believe that this is because fewer people are buying into their vaccine mentality, it just happens to be the following. These diseases are more prevalent among, quote, foreign-born by a margin of almost 10 to 1. Did you hear what I said? They're lying to you again. The government is killing your children by flooding America with unscreened illegal aliens. Did you hear this? It just so happens that these diseases are more prevalent amongst foreign-born by a margin of 10 to 1. The question is, do we want to protect our children or not? Do we want to protect our borders, language, and culture or not? Obama is now worked up over health care, but maybe if we shut the borders to disease-ridden illegal aliens, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in right now. Moreover, after he gets through jamming socialized medicine down our throats, he's going to try to jam 30 million illegals down our throats. And so I go back to my main point. I have advocated borders, language, and culture ever since I started in radio in 1994. The New World Order opposes borders. They want open borders. The New World Order opposes a single language that is a cohesive element in any nation. They want a polyglot of languages. The more the merrier, because it keeps people apart. It isolates people. It separates people. It divides people. And they oppose any nation's culture. They do not want nations to have individual identifiable cultures. I have written about it. I've talked about it. That is why the British put Michael Savage on the list of banned people. And that's why you have to help me. That's why you have to go to michaelsavage.com and order the book. That's why you have to pay very close attention to what I'm going to say to you over the next few weeks. Because right after Labor Day, we're going to start a letter-writing, email-writing campaign to every congressman and every senator in America. Over 100 of them joined to get Ramos and Campion freed from the jails. Remember the Border Patrol agents? I hope to get at least 100 congressmen and senators to demand that this illegitimate labor government get my name off that list immediately. This is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So the Lockerbie bomber who actually killed over 200 people is released, and the left wing cheers. And the very next few days, instead of attacking the decision to release a terrorist, the radical left instead attacks the CIA and says that, oh, they put a loaded gun next to the head of a terrorist, or they threatened his family. Now, I want you to understand who we're dealing with. These are people who actually blow up buildings, blow up airplanes, cut people's heads off while they're alive. And these verminous rats on the left are concerned that the men who have the guts to actually go in a cell and face them should be tried and convicted of some kind of violation of the Geneva Convention. They're going to get us all killed. Don't you understand this? Don't you understand the danger you are in because of the psychopaths in the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild, and within the Justice Department itself? Don't you understand who is running the country right now? Can't you figure it out? Can't you put two and two together? The radical academic left, in cahoots with the Islamic International Fascist Networks, have now put a loop around America's neck, and they're tightening the loop. Their friends in the rat media, of course, instead of focusing on the release of the Lockerbie bomber, instead of focusing on a member of the American media being put on a list of murderers and terrorists, namely yours truly, Michael Savage, instead, they're focusing on the brave men and or women who actually had the guts to go in a cell with the most despicable human beings the planet has ever seen. The lowest of the low, vermin who would take a child and throw it down a well. Vermin who cut people's heads off while they're alive, while chanting. If you don't believe it, go on to various websites. You can find it. They pay no attention to those atrocities. They pay no attention to the atrocity of Pan Am, the Pan Am plane being blown up midair, killing over 200 people. Instead, they pay attention to the way these rats were interrogated to prevent another 9/11, or to prevent another ship from being blown up, or to prevent God knows what. Or what if it was to interrogate somebody in Iraq who knew where the next IED was going to go off that would have injured or damaged one of our Marines or soldiers? The reason that the perverts in the ACLU, the psychopaths in the ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild don't care about that is because they have no relatives in the military. They don't care about the military because they have no relatives in the military. They have loyalties outside of the United States of America. Their loyalties are not with America. Their loyalties are not for America. Their loyalties are not about America. And right now, America's survival is at stake. If we permit the left-wing rats, the psychopaths, the drug addicts with law degrees to bring down the CIA, they will have effectively destroyed the last white blood cells we have left, able and willing to combat the viruses that would wipe this country off the map. That's my opinion. What's your opinion? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's move to the callers. In Florida, Carrie, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, first I wanted to give you a compliment, and second I had a question. First of all, you completely changed the way that I look at things. In the last 2 years I've been listening to you, I had no opinion of politics at all. And now I look forward to flipping to my AM station and listening to your wisdom and knowledge, completely giving me a lens that now everything that I look at, I can see through everything.
But, Carrie, don't you understand why that makes me a dangerous man to the Obama administration and to the international socialist brigades? Don't you understand that anybody who can awaken the people, can enlighten the people, can motivate the people is a danger to the New World Order? Don't you see that, Carrie?
Yes, I definitely see. And I can't say your name or speak my ideas to a lot of people at work, friends. It's like I'm speaking like conspiracy theories, crazy things. And
that's because they've been brainwashed, Carrie. And the brainwashed must be expunged from your life. I had to do it before I entered radio, or soon thereafter, I had to get rid of my so-called friends, because all of them dragged me down. Every last one of them dragged me down with their biases and their cowardice. And if you have to go it alone, then go it alone. It's better to walk alone in truth than to be amongst the mob in ignorance. That's all I can say, Carrie. Thanks for the call. Skip, Ohio, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I tried so long to get a hold of you. I'm 63 years old. I'm retired for 3.5 years, and I've been a Democrat all my life. I've been a union official all my life, and until January 8th, and I started listening to some of these radio stations that Carrie uses and others, and I despise what's going on with this administration.
Well, don't you understand why they want talk radio silence? Because we're the only voices of opposition. We're the actual dissent in America that the phony left claims they believe in dissent. I am Dr. Dissent, not them. They are the government. They're the establishment. They're the ones you should fear.
I do.
Tell me a man who believes that you can trust the government, and I will show you an evil man. Show me a man who says, I trust the government, and you know that he's in on the conspiracy. What is there to trust in a government? Even liberals will tell you, love your country, but don't trust your government. That's a given across the entire political spectrum, is it not, Skip? Conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, don't trust your government. What was the Constitution written for? It was written by very wise white males hundreds of years ago to make certain that we did not wind up living in a tyranny again. Now we wake up living in the tyranny of Obama, who has czar after czar after czar.
Savage.
Try to look at a society the way you would look at a human body. There are many different components of a government, many different components of a body. And, of course, the principal duty or job of a government is to protect the citizens. Now, when a government starts to frighten the citizens, it becomes something other than what it's supposed to be. A government is not supposed to frighten its citizenry. It's supposed to protect its citizenry. But when people start to say, wait a minute, why are there so many deals with foreign countries? Why are there so many czars? Who was this president? Where was he born? Where do his loyalties lie? Why is the CIA, our white blood cells, the equivalent of our white blood cells, why is the CIA being attacked now? Who is the ACLU? Who elected them to office? How did they come to be? Who funds them? You see, when you start asking these questions, you become a very important citizen. You can call yourself an informed citizen. But when anyone tells you you shouldn't ask these questions, you know that you're dealing with a brainwashed moron who is not worthy of your conversation. David in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Dr. Savage. I really enjoy your show. I'm annoyed. You know, when you were talking before about the ACLU going after the CIA, and it just reminded me how the ACLU felt the need to defend the Nazis and felt the need to just constantly defend those that I would consider, you know, just kind of engage in things to usurp our fundamental
right.
foundation.
Right, that's correct. And some of the defenders of the Nazis' right to march in Skokie, Illinois, are some of our great First Amendment lawyers, to give you some idea of who they really are. But what's your question?
Where are they getting this money from, and are they a not-for-profit? If they're not-for-profit, how could they maintain this not-for-profit status and also engage in...
Well, because their friends in the government make certain that they don't violate the law. Even if they do, the government will never pursue them. It's just like Media Matters. Media Matters is a 501c3 type corporation, nonprofit, but in fact they focus only on conservative talk radio, which makes them a political organization, which means they're violating nonprofit status, which means that they should be investigated by the U.S. government and their nonprofit status removed. But since the government is their friends, since they are the government, These groups, the ACLU, Media Matters, National Lawyers Guild, are effectively now our government. But your question is, where does the ACLU get their money from? Isn't that right?
Correct.
Okay. You have to look at the predominant donors to the ACLU to get that answer. And it's hidden. It's very well hidden. But I happen to know, because I researched this, that the principal donors, the largest single donors to the ACLU in recent years was a family called Sandler, S-A-N-D-L-E-R. The Sandlers, Herbert Sandler, now hold on because you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you. Herbert Sandler is the former CEO and CO with his wife Marion Sandler of Golden West Financial Corporation. Golden West was sold in 2006, shortly before the blowout of the banks, for $24 billion to Wachovia Bank. People have investigated Golden West's fortune. Golden West deals, and many of their mortgages were in the subprime market. You following me? So they bailed out. They sold the bank for $24 billion to Wachovia. They gave, the last I checked, $9 million. The Herbert Sandler and Marion Sandler gave $9 million to the ACLU. Does that answer your question in part?
No, it does in part as to where they got the $9 million, but it just seems to me the type of activities they're engaging in. That they have to be...
Well, but you asked where does the ACLU get money? I'm telling you, from radical liberals like the Sandlers. They gave them $9 million. Now the result is the CIA is being investigated. Could it be because the CIA or the FBI was on the track of investigating Golden West Financial? How do we know that there's not a connection here? How do we know there's not a connection here? That it's all about covering their own tracks? Do we have any way of knowing that? We're in trouble. We're in very, very deep trouble. Who is the watchdog? The Romans had a saying, who is going to watch the watchdogs? Who is going to watch the watchdogs? The ACLU is now your watchdog? Psychotic, drug-addicted psychopaths are now the watchdog of the United States of America? Houston, Texas. AJ, you're on the Savage Nation.
Big time Savage, baby. I want you to keep the good work up. And don't you let these idiots get your morale down, big guy. Because, Dave Savage, we all behind you no matter what they say. Hey, we're going to get your name off of this daggone thing if we have to definitely email them 10 times a day to get your name off this doggone list.
Well, and AJ, the day will come. We definitely will get to you. You know, the day will come that I will call upon you and every one of my listeners. It may be a protest march. It may be getting 10,000 or 20,000 people outside the White House or outside the British Embassy. It may be a boycott of British and Scottish goods, but it will be. It will be. I'm telling you, as I stand here, it will be. I will not let this go on much longer. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number, michaelsavage.com. We're talking about who gives the money to the ACLU, and that's why it's important for us to discuss this. Sal in New York, WOR is calling. Go ahead, please.
Yes, my friend. I think this is a stupid war. I doubt that we can't interrogate them, and they cut our heads off. This is a joke. What are they going to do? We catch them and give them ice cream? Is it a joke? And another thing, my friend, I got a wife. She's a lady of color. We got kids. My kids are not African-Americans. My kids are Americans. I don't understand this nonsense about African-American when you're born in America. Can you help me?
Well, I have no answer to that. I mean, I don't know what the words mean when you say, you know, well, I guess it comes from Italian-American, I suppose, where people talk about their national origins in that regard, you know, where they came from. In that regard, it maybe makes sense, but I don't see the necessity to continue to talk about that. I thought we're supposed to have a president who unites us rather than divides us. I think that's the bigger issue, correct?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you something, Dr. Harris. I love you, and I'm going to continue to listen to you, and I'm going to listen to you till the day I die. So you have a good day, my friend. Good night.
Well, thank you. See, I get all sorts of people from all sorts of backgrounds. Here's an article from USA Today from 2008. Sandler defends Golden West and Wachovia debacle. Did you hear this? Once hailed for running their savings and loan company like an endearing mom-and-pop shop, the Sandlers were the biggest winners in the Golden West sale. They're also the biggest donors to the ACLU, so far as I know. By the way, the Sandlers helped found and are among the largest benefactors of the Center for American Progress, a so-called progressive think tank. So if you want to know where they're getting their money from, start with the Sandlers. Ask yourself why Herbert Sandler, who created Golden West Financial Corporation, which sold to Wachovia before the collapse of the banks, ask why they're giving so much money to groups like the ACLU and the Center for American Progress, who are now going after the CIA, and my guess will soon be going after the FBI. Ask yourself if there's any connection between a potential investigation or investigations, without implying any wrongdoing, why the smartest people in finance, the Golden West Sandlers, would be doing a thing like this. Why would Herb and Marion Sandler, widely regarded as the shrewdest of the savings and loan set, be giving so much money to these radical left-wing groups? Can you figure it out? You see, Marion and Herbert Sandler formed a holding company called Golden West Financial Corporation in 1963 when they acquired the Oakland, California-based Golden West Savings. Nothing wrong with that. That's part of the American dream, isn't it, to build a nice business? But when you look at what happened to our banks recently, shortly after they sold to Wachovia, as you well know, there was a collapse of banks in America. Was there not? Well, they made $24 billion when they sold their little SNL to Wachovia. And what are they doing with their money? Well, they're devoting it to groups like the ACLU and other radical left-wing progressive organizations. You say, well, they have a right to do so, which they do. They certainly do. But you ask me who gives money to the ACLU? Last I checked, the Sandlers of SNL fame are the largest single donors in ACLU history. I could be mistaken, but they gave $9 million to the ACLU. Why? Why are they so interested in the ACLU? Texas, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, thank you all for what you do, for standing up for us on the radio. My comment was on the CIA, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for the CIA and the FBI. And
so do I. Without them, we would have been dead a long time ago. The country would have been lost. Okay, we know that. I don't understand how anybody in America doesn't understand that.
I think they're our last defense. I keep hoping every morning that we get up and there's going to be a news story that the CIA has uncovered this crooked, just exposed the crooked government that we have.
Or how about the CIA is going to expose the ACLU for their foreign ties? Or how about the CIA has finally uncovered the relationship between Media Matters and foreign entities? Wouldn't those be wonderful headlines if they were true? Let me explain something. No organism, whether it be a nation or a human being, can survive if its immune system is compromised or destroyed. And by going after the white blood cells, as the ACLU does regularly, meaning the police, the soldiers, the Marines, and now the CIA, what they're trying to do is, in essence, destroy our white blood cells, our internal defense mechanism. They will kill us all if they're not stopped. And I don't know what it's going to take for the people to finally rise up and say, enough is enough. I want to unmask the character who's running the ACLU. We want a thorough investigation of this man because he has a name. We want to know why he hates the CIA. We want to know why he hates the FBI. We want to know why he hates America and who he works for. Wouldn't that be a good series of questions to begin with?
That would be excellent if somebody has got the cojones to ask him. I hope they do.
We can ask all the questions we want, but who's going to follow it up? Brian Williams of ABC News?
No, I'm hoping that the CIA...
You think one of the empty skirts in the media is going to follow up a question like this? Are they going to look into who the head of the ACLU is and what his background is? Are they going to look into the connections between Media Matters and foreign powers? Are they going to look into why the Sandlers gave $9 million to the ACLU? You think you're going to see that in a local newspaper? Before this show is over, I can guarantee you that this question series, this line of questioning will be ended. No reporter in America will touch these questions. Not one.
Owned by the government.
Not one. And that's why Michael Savage is on the banned in Britain list. That is why the vermin in Britain, the Labour government, released the Lockerbie bomber, but will not take my name off a list of murderers and terrorists. That is why the rat vermin in the American left continues to say, I belong on that list, and continues to support the Lockerbie bombers. Have you heard one person on the left say the Lockerbie bomber should not have been released? Did you hear one person in the media say that from MSNBC, More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks? Did any one of the empty suits on MSNBC say this is an outrage? Because I must have missed it. In essence, they cheered it. They went along with the program. So that's why I say to you, it's one man. It's David and Goliath. And I'm not Goliath. I'm David. But the vermin will have you believe I'm Goliath. One man alone. One man alone, think about it, against an entire government. Is this not a repeat of history? Now, I've been thinking about the David and Goliath story. I am going to win because I'm right and Goliath is wrong. I will win. It's going to probably take a lot more time than I thought. Even though I'm right, even though I'm innocent, and even though they're wrong and even though they're evil, doesn't mean that things change overnight. And that's because we have a complicit and compliant radical left-wing media that refuses to cover this story, and that includes your favorite talk show hosts who are now on the side of the opposition. Do you know that your talk shows that you think are on your side and the side of America, by not covering this story, even though they may hate my guts, even though they may fear me because I'm 100 times smarter than them, even though they may fear me because I'm their competitor, by not covering the story, do you know that they've taken the side of the opposition? They have de facto taken the side of the British government. Put that in your golf bag and hit it, Rush. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right. I've told you what I wanted to say. I've laid it out for you as clear as a bell. I've given you my opinion on a couple of topics. I've asked a couple of questions. And now we're going to go to something a little lighter because I can't sustain this kind of a focus for hours and hours and hours a day. If you want to call me on this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I will tell you that living well is the best revenge. I mean, I can talk about lifestyle issues just to calm down a little bit because I do know how to relax. When I do go out, I know how to relax when I go out. And it's very rare. Maybe once a week I'll go out and, you know, I sit and relax. I have a bottle of wine. Actually, I'm drinking wine again. If you want to talk about alcohol, I mean, it leaves me with a hangover, but it feels good going down. Isn't that interesting? Why does wine, no matter what I drink, leave me with a hangover, but beer or vodka doesn't? It's an interesting phenomenon. I know the answer. It's the complexities, the fusel oils in wine. No matter what you get today, it's been tricked up in the winemaker's chemistry laboratory. They're not making wine the way. It's all like chemicals now, chemistry. But I had, Friday night after the show, I went over to Aliotta's. I hadn't been there in a while. And Richie prepared for me himself. He went in the kitchen. I mean, it's one of the busiest kitchens he ever seen. I remember when I was a kid, there was a restaurant in New York called Mama Leone's. And they used to turn out, I don't know, thousands of meals a night or something like that. And I used to marvel at it. I once read a book about how in the heck could anyone cook. So I try to cook a meal for a couple of people and to get the bread and the meal and the everything on the table at once is very hard. So how do you do it for hundreds of people at a time over and over again? So every time I go in the kitchen of a very busy restaurant, I'm always awed by it, frankly, because it's amazing the skill it takes to produce everything to come out on time. So I ordered mussels marinara, which I got to tell you, there's no better mussels marinara in the world that I've tried than in that restaurant, Aliotta's. You say, well, why am I talking about it? Because I'm sick and tired of talking about the ACLU. I'm sick and tired of telling you what Obama's doing to America. I'm sick and tired of talking to myself and nobody else about being banned in Britain. I'm sick of telling you to go buy Banned in Britain. You know what? Don't buy the book. Do buy the book. It's not going to change, you know, my life one way or the other. I want you to read Banned in Britain so that you can see the story, the modern-day story of David versus Goliath. And I don't know how this ends. Don't you understand it's not over yet? Don't you understand that the story isn't over? It's an ongoing story. It's a work in progress. That's what I'm saying to you. And by buying the book and by owning the book, you're a part of this history. So I can only sustain this for so long. So as I say, Friday night I went into the place. I ordered mussels marinara and a bottle of wine, good bread. And frankly, I was happy to be left alone and sit at a table and look at people and just eat and drink. But the mussels marinara is a magic. I didn't even eat anything else. I will tell you, I brought home a hamburger for Teddy. And he ate it for three nights in a row. He loves it. The dog really likes his meat. No matter how you try to give him that kibble, they don't like it as much as they like meat dogs. The truth is they're pure carnivores. They go berserk. It's like children who were raised as vegetarians. You put a chicken leg around them, they'll attack it on the table. And speaking of attacking it, I have an assistant that works, two assistants. So one of the young ladies, my computer wasn't working. I asked her to touch the button on the computer for me. The dog attacked her hand. He didn't bite her. He mouthed her. The other assistant, the young man, if he comes in here, he goes after his feet. Teddy does not like anybody in the radio studio. This is, I don't know, they have these instincts. You can't get mad at him. I said, okay, Ted, they're friends, but he doesn't understand that. If anybody touches anything to do with my equipment or comes in the room, they're enemies. That's why they're wonderful. That's why they're loyal. That's why they're great. That's why they're not cats. That's why they're dogs. So what do you want to talk about? Food, mussels, marinara? You don't need Viagra. What do you want to talk about? Marinara sauce? You know, I should do a whole show on how to make a proper marinara sauce when you think about it. I don't like sweet sauces, but I frankly happen to know that even if people say there's no sweet, there is always a little bit in it. I prefer tart. Everything should be very tomato-y. And even though I said I was off tomatoes last week, I cheated. I went back on tomato sauce. I can't give everything. I realize. I thought about it over the weekend. I said, what, are you crazy? You're going to give up dairy? Okay, no big deal. Even though I love Parmesan cheese and Romano cheese and provolone. All right, I can give that up. I never liked milk. I don't eat ice cream. I can't stand it. But to give up tomato and tomato-based products, it's like, how can I do all of this at once? I mean, sure, maybe I'd be healthier in a certain way, but it's like a robot. I mean, who wants to live like that? What, just put oil in my joints? Last night I saw a show on saints on the earth. They are doctors from, I think this Dr. Stein from the Los Angeles. I was watching TLC before Mad Men. I said, all right, I'll watch Mad Men again. A stinker. This series is done. It's toast. It's garbage. They ran out of ideas already. Now, I got to tell you, Matthew Weiner is a brilliant man. He did some of the best writing that television has ever seen. They're out of ideas already. It's a stiff. And also, I'll tell you something else. To take her, Grace Kelly, the Grace Kelly lookalike, and make her pregnant, what are they doing that for? She was attracting too much attention? As one of them said, oh, look, Grace Kelly swallowed a basketball. I have nothing against pregnant women. I think they're beautiful. But you don't do that to an actress and expect her to have the same magnetism as she would have had without it. I mean, let's level with each other. Now already they're moving in directions that at the end of the show, it's over already. I couldn't wait till it was over. I couldn't wait till it was over. But before that, I watched TLC, and I saw them separating Siamese twins in America. These doctors are amazing. How do they do this? Now, that's amazing.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. We are talking about who funds the ACLU and why are they attacking the CIA. We are asking if there is a connection between this attack on the CIA by the ACLU and the donors to the ACLU. In other words, might some of the donors to the ACLU be hiding something that they fear will be uncovered by the CIA and by attacking the CIA through their mad dogs in the ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild and such, will they in that way throw the balance against their enemies, meaning the defenders of America? We are also talking about the fact that the healthcare debacle has taken Obama's ratings to a new low, the lowest, frankly, that you could ever imagine by all pollsters, and that now that he is in trouble, his friends in the media are focusing on Michael Jackson. We can talk about that. We could talk about television, if you want. We can talk about the series Mad Men, which I think is finished, that it is gone into the toilet, that Matthew Weiner has run out of ideas. Remember The Sopranos was incredible and kept everyone on the edge of their seat for years? And then they started in with the dream sequences and the this and the that. And they got creative and tried to show how brilliant they were. Once a director does that, the audience usually goes away. It means the director or the writers have run out of ideas. So TV, we could talk about Mussels Marinara, which I mentioned that I ate in Aliotto's on Friday night. And I really loved the meal. I hadn't been there in a very long time. People say, oh, it's Fisherman's Wharf, and I don't go there because it's touristy. There's a reason tourists go there. There's a reason tourists go to Fisherman's Wharf. I actually love it. It's unbelievable. The views are amazing. Again, it was a nice Friday night. I mean, just had a very nice Friday night. I bicycled after the show down the Embarcadero all the way. There's a beach in San Francisco that you shouldn't know about that I'm not going to tell you about. That's all at the end of the wharf by the Nautical Museum that's under construction. And at the end of the day, 6:30, the tourists were in the water. The polar bears were in the water. I don't mean the Al Gore's polar bears. I mean the people who swim in cold water. It looks so amazing. I couldn't do it. It was very appealing, I mean, to throw yourself into a 58, 59-degree bay. I couldn't do it. These guys, I don't know how they do it, and they don't get sick from it. Very invigorating. You see a lot of tourists now from Scandinavia. And, you look, you see it. It's interesting. I mean, if you had young children at one point who have grown up, it's like seeing yourself walking there. It doesn't matter what race they are. They could be black, they could be Mexican, they could be Asian. I see myself walking the streets of San Francisco. I know exactly what they're feeling. I know exactly what they're going to do, more or less. I mean, their kids are going to run around, then they're going to have a little dinner on the wharf, then they're going to go to the hotel. You know, it's like just what you did when you were younger. And life goes on. In that sense, it's very renewing for me to go around the streets of a city and to sort of keep my ear to what's going on in the world. That's why I do it. But when I put my ear to what's going on in Washington, when I put my ear to what's going on in our own media, and when I put my ear to what's going on in this country, I come back as though I have put my ear to a horror show itself. And again, I don't want to go down that road all over again. I did it for an hour straight now, and I can't repeat that energy right now because it's almost impossible to do it. I will encourage you to go to michaelsavage.com when you get a moment, or go to me on Facebook. We have a new Facebook page now, and I'm gaining about 300 Facebook friends a day, which I think is pretty good. Mainly younger people use Facebook. I still don't understand how it works, but it's something I did because eventually I'll build up a Twitter and a Facebook following, and I'll do what Obama was able to do. In other words, if the most left-wing senator in history could become president, then Michael Savage can affect change in the next election. Let's put it to you that way. How's that? Does that work for you? If this audience could stop the Dubai port steal under George Bush, if this audience could stop the appointment of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court, if this audience could single-handedly turn around illegal aliens from their legalization pathway, then we can do a lot in this country to save it from the radical left that is tearing us apart. And if you want to talk about that, you want to talk about the release of the Lockerbie terrorist, by the same Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of England, who will not take my name off the list of murderers and terrorists. And I am a member of the American media. Whether you like me or not, you have to understand what I'm saying to you, what an outrage this is. It's interesting to me. I was watching a film last night done, I think, in 1951, called The Portrait of Dorian Gray. Now, of course, I knew the plot because I had read Oscar Wilde many years ago, but I didn't know how brilliant Wilde was. The dialogue was astounding. The sets were amazing. The lighting was amazing. You know, black and white, England, Victorian era, the settings were gorgeous. But the dialogue was beyond belief, anything I've heard in years. Some of the wit that Wilde was capable of. And, you know, it's about a wealthy Englishman who becomes increasingly debauched, whose face does not change in person, but his portrait changes. You know, it's an interesting fantasy. All of his evil and his degeneracy doesn't come out in his own face, but it comes out of the painting of him, the big portrait. It's an interesting plot. But what's interesting to me is that when his portrait first starts to change, he focuses on the meanness that occurs around his mouth in this otherwise serene rendering of him. The meanness appears first around his mouth. When I looked at the portrait of Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister, on the websites this morning, I saw the same mouth as I saw in Dorian Gray. I saw the same, debauchery, the same distortions the same evil. When I wake up and I see the most radical, degenerate, insane organization in American history, not elected, literally putting a strangle noose around the CIA while our president parties with the billionaires on Martha's Vineyard, and the media is told to stay away, and like the little jerks that they are, they do, I realize that this country is ripe for a complete and total takeover if it hasn't already occurred. So there's an awful lot in what I just said to you. It went from, you know, the simple to the profound and back again to the simple. And if you care to comment on any of this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We also talked about who gives the most to this radical ACLU, this unelected arm of the government. And we found out that a man named Mr. Sandler, who sold Golden West Savings and Loan to Wachovia just before the collapse of the banks, we understand he gave almost $9 million to the ACLU. And here's the AP business writer from a few years ago. Once hailed for running a savings and loan company like an endearing mom-and-pop shop, Herb and Marion Sandler are now being vilified as ruthless home lenders who helped destroy Wachovia Corp. and contributed to the financial decay that led to the U.S. government's $700 billion rescue plan to buy rotten mortgages. After deflecting the media for months, Herb Sandler defended his lending record in an interview Sunday. This is from a while ago. Sandler also tried to make a case for why Wachovia shareholders should be demanding substantially more than the $14.8 billion that Wells Fargo and Company has offered for the company. This is old now. Sandler, 77, spoke to the Associated Press in the San Francisco office of his family's charitable foundation the morning after NBC's Saturday Night Live broadcast a skit deriding the Sandlers as predatory lenders who had duped unsophisticated borrowers and Wachovia, too. Although the timing of the interview was coincidental, Sandler was seething after watching a replay of the skit on the Internet. Quote, "I've been listening to this crap for 2 years," Sandler said. "We are being unfairly tarred. People have been telling us to speak out for some time, but we didn't think it was appropriate. That was clearly a mistake. Mr. Sandler, I am Michael Savage. I live in the San Francisco area, as I understand you do. You are the largest single donor to the ACLU so far as we know. I am inviting you on the Savage Nation at your convenience to discuss why you give so much money to the ACLU. 1-800-449-8255. San Diego, Tyler, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, a little over a week ago, it was reported here in our local paper that Joan and Irwin Jacobs, the billionaire founders of Qualcomm, the publicly traded telecommunications giant here in town, are giving $10 million to the ACLU. And the only thing that was reported in the newspaper were some glowing phrases about the increased spread of justice and how it can help.
Wait, hold on. You lost me somewhere. Qualcomm isn't, he's in prison, though, isn't he?
No, they've done nothing illegal. They're a very successful, prominent company here in San Diego. They've done a lot of great charity work, but when it came, when Mr. and Mrs. Jacobs, when it was announced they were giving $10 million last week in the Union Tribune here, our local newspaper, it was nothing but a glowing article. And
why would they give money to this anti-American ACLU that's undermining our white blood cells in the CIA? Why?
Well, all I can guess is that they support a lot of liberal candidates and
Let me explain something that people don't quite understand yet. I've met a lot of devout, sanctimonious liberals in my life, and all of them pose as humanitarians, but behind every humanitarian there is usually something nefarious. I have discovered that's what I discovered. The bigger the story of a desire to help the needy, a desire to help the downtrodden, is usually a desire to cover up some type of crime. In fact, if you read the French writers of the 19th century, which I grew up on, one of them wrote that behind every great fortune there is a great crime. Now, that's not entirely true, but in the case of liberals who give to the ACLU, I would suggest that you read the French writers of the 19th century. Why they would be giving money to the ACLU, which is now spending all of its time attacking the CIA, demanding that brave men and women who defended us during the Bush years be imprisoned for defending us, taking the side of the enemy, taking the side of the terrorists who would do another 9/11, the only thing I could figure out is because the CIA in some way stumbled upon information to do with the financial machinations of some of these organizations. that some of these gigantic financial organizations feared or discovered that what they were doing that may or may not have been illegal was uncovered by operatives within the CIA. And in order to cover their tracks, in order to make certain that what they did was not investigated, they gave tons of money to the mad dogs in the ACLU and told them, go after the CIA. And I'm going to say something else. As sure as I'm standing here, the FBI will be next. And if you want to wake up one day and find out that perverts and psychopaths and drug dealers, drug addicts, excuse me, with law degrees are now the equivalent of the FBI and the CIA, you're going to wind up without a nation. We're as close to the end as we possibly can be, and I don't know if we can still pull it back from the brink. I'm telling you the way I see it. I have never seen anything like this. Start at the top. Remember, a fish rots from the head down. We got rid of George Bush. People voted him out because of his incompetence and his corruption. That's a given. In came the most radical left-wing college professor that we could that the people could dig up on the Democrat side. Now, remember what I'm saying to you. I'm not a partisan Republican. I'm an independent. I have been for many years. There are Democrats that I would have chosen over John McCain. I can't name any, but there are theoretically some. They instead picked the most radical left-wing senator in American history, a relatively unknown, by the way. No one even knows where he was born. That's still an issue. This man is now the president. At the same time he's president, he appoints a radical left-wing attorney general named Eric Holder, the same man who released the Puerto Rican terrorists under Hillary during the Clinton years. This man is now the top cop in the United States of America. Now, there are many other people. There are street thugs from the streets of Oakland and San Francisco who are inside the White House. There's the former chairman of the of one of the major organizations to legalize 30 million illegal aliens named Cecilia Munoz of La Raza, the race. The race now has an office inside the White House. So when you add all of these elements up, you have the building blocks of a government within a government who is now governing the governed, and I will let it go at that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let's think about thinking for a minute. It's a very big topic of man and thinking, and you have to understand the Greeks to understand what thinking is in order to get yourself out of the place you're in. There was a Greek philosopher named Plato who said, most of the social and political ills from which you suffer are under your control, given only the will and courage to change them. You can live in another and a wiser fashion if you choose to think it out and work it out. You are not awake to your own power, close quote. And that was a teaching that, frankly, has not yet sunk into the common intelligence of our people to this day. We are still in many ways pre-fourth century. We find men who are living in a childlike, dreamlike state with primitive thought. But those of us who are given to a disciplined and critical attack upon the problems of life, those of us, in other words, who can think with logic, understand the problems that we are in and how we got here. But unfortunately for us, because of the flood of illegal aliens, let's put that on the top of the table, and you'll see why the elites did this. It's not that they're stupid necessarily, but their language barrier is such that they can't really follow the ins and the outs of the arguments that are going on. In other words, they're a malleable mass of people that will continuously put demagogues in power, demagogues on the order of the type we have now. And so you have people who live in a childlike, dreamlike state of primitive thought, and they don't like those of us who have a disciplined and critical ability to think. So if I say to you, I don't like you thinking in symbolism and imagery, I don't like you talking about monsters with taboos and awes and restraints, I want you to engage with me in systematic thinking, I think that if they did that, they'd come to understand the danger we are in. And that goes to almost every problem we are talking about. And it goes not only to America today, where we still have the power to save America, as you could see with the town halls, what happened. And you saw who attacked them the most demagogue, the biggest demagogues in Congress, the biggest demagogues, Specter, Boxer, Feinstein, they called them every name under the sun. They're threatened by discipline and logic.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Would you like to hear what the Scottish moronic justice said about releasing the Lockerbie bomber, or you've heard it? Would you like to hear Peter Benjamin Mandelson, president of the Board of Trade in Britain, on the release of the Lockerbie bomber? Listen to clip six, and you'll hear what it's all about.
I've met Colonel Gaddafi's son twice this year, as I've already stated. On both occasions, Mr. Gaddafi raised the issue of the Libyan prisoner in Scotland, as all representatives of the Libyan government do whenever they meet anyone from Britain. And they had the same response from me that they've had from any other member of the government, and that is that the issue of the prisoner's release is entirely a matter for the Scottish Justice Minister. That's how it was left. That's how it was well understood.
Well, if that were true, then you wouldn't hear the following question in clip eight, would you? Listen to this one.
But why is the Libyan government thanking the UK government if it's just a Scottish matter?
You'd have to ask the Libyan government that. I don't think you should actually take too literally what Mr. Gaddafi says. I gather he's also going to thank the Queen. You know, look, they're obviously relieved to see this prisoner back home with his family. He's in his dying weeks or months, I don't know. But there, he's been absolutely...
All right, we heard enough of this bull crap. The reason there's an outcry is because there's a quid pro quo here. And as you well know, the British will put quid before anything on earth. You know, as they say about the missionaries that came to Hawaii, they came to do good, and they did very well indeed. So when you hear quid pro quo, you have to understand that it has a triple meaning here. And, of course, it's always the quid. And the Brits wanted a deal with the Libyans, so they traded blood money. You know, it was oil for blood. That's all. The very same corrupt Labor government that put Michael Savage on a list with known murderers and terrorists and will not remove him, even though a furtherance of discovery has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that I've never provoked violence, their own emails say that, and that they put me on the list in order to make the radical Muslims not feel singled out. Even though that came out in our email discovery thus far with your help to the Legal Defense Fund, the very same portraits of Dorian Gray who run the Labor Party, the very same Dorian Grays who are running the Labor government, have dug their heels in and will not take my name off the list. That's why I say please go to michaelsavage.com and put two and two together. And this is a book that every liberal should own. They won't buy the book, though, because they don't really believe in what they say. They're all liars. There's a big difference between a true liberal and a progressive. And I don't know how many true liberals are left in America. I know that there's a slew of millions of progressives. And the word progressive is a front for many different groups, not the least of which is traitor. To me, the word progressive usually means traitor. Reuven in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Templeman, October the 24th. Yeah, I remember.
Reuven, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
And it is George Benson. This is his new one.
Right. Thanks for the call. And a real winner that one was. A little call screening would be good. New York City, WOR. Janet, go ahead, please. Hello, Janet. Okay, I guess we've lost two in a row. One more, and I'm going to take a break. We're going to go for broke now. San Francisco, Kenny W. Jason, go ahead, please.
Savage, love the show. My comment is the reason the CIA is being attacked is because we have no national pride anymore. The word American has been so diluted by African American, Indian American, Latino American. There's no just pure Americans, and that's the problem.
Well, I don't think that you're right. I think it has nothing to do with the politics of racial and ethnic identity. I think it has to do with the politics of radical communism in the form of progressives who are inside the ACLU and corrupt members of the business community who are using these radical communists and these lawyer groups in order to throw off our intelligence agencies. They do not want the intelligence agencies doing their job. I don't think it has anything to do with other than pure corruption and pure money. And, of course, the threat from within is overwhelming. It's never been this great. Indiana Frank, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how you doing? I was just finding it interesting how our brave soldiers are overseas, you know, fighting against these terrorists, having bombs and bullets whizzing past their heads. However, our congressmen don't have the courage to come and face us so-called Nazis and wild mobs at these town hall meetings.
Yeah, that's an interesting combination. But let's talk about our soldiers and the number of them dying in Afghanistan and the numbers who died and are dying in Iraq. Let us say from roadside bombs. Now, let us say you're a U.S. Marine and you capture a cell of terrorists and you want to interrogate them because you know that they're going to set off the IEDs in that neighborhood. How would you go about getting the information from them when they're hard as nails? What would you do to get the information out of them?
I would personally do whatever it takes.
Would you withhold withhold a Quran from them in order to make them not in order to make them tell you? Of course not. That wouldn't work. Would you withhold a prayer rug from them? Would that work? No, that wouldn't work. You've got to use the techniques that were used for years by police agencies in order to scare the enemy into giving up the information. Short of actual torture, which was never conducted, by the way. You'll notice that actual torture was never conducted. This is pseudo-torture. Putting a gun next to a terrorist's head is not torture. Shooting the terrorist in the kneecap is torture. Let's go down the list. The radical left says that they threatened the terrorist families. So what? Big deal. Did they kill the terrorist families the way the terrorists and their cousins killed our families? No. And so, therefore, you understand which side these lawyers are on, the ACLU lawyers. They are on the other side. They're fighting for the other side. They're fighting to kill us. They're fighting to kill our troops. And now they're going after the CIA. It would actually take a loyal, patriotic American president to stop them. But our loyal, patriotic American president is right now in Martha's Vineyard, and he released the mad dogs on the CIA because I suspect that the CIA also had something of a surprise nature about Obama, perhaps even relating to the, quote, birther controversy, which is why him and Eric Holder finally pulled the trigger on this particular investigation. Remember, this didn't start yesterday. The radical left has been after the CIA for a long time now. They have wanted to drag Bush. They have wanted to drag the CIA down for a very long time. Obama pretended he was Solomon-esque. Obama pretended he was above the fray. Obama pretended he wouldn't do this. But did you notice when it happened? A few days after he went away to Martha's Vineyard when he wouldn't take any questions from the already supine press? So therefore, it was Obama who did it. So what is Obama covering that the CIA may have uncovered about him? I don't know. But you have to ask these questions. Try to use logic, not emotion. Try to use reason, not feelings. I know it's difficult for most of you who have not been trained in deductive or inductive logic. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, San Diego June. You're up on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hi, Michael. I love your show. I've enjoyed listening to it as I've been waiting.
Thank you.
My concern is in these town hall meetings, they're focusing just on the health care issues. I've been laid off since April after 20 years of working in aerospace. Our work was sent to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
My ex-husband is a CPA. My best friend is a CPA with a master's in taxation. They're both unemployed. Just about everybody I know is either unemployed.
Wow. And what salary range were you folks in, June?
I made between $75,000 and $80,000 a year. My ex-husband made $218,000 a year. I don't know what Elaine made, but, you know, they bring with them, you know, 30 years experience and they're...
Well, you see, that's why you and your husband should have gotten a job in the government, because those jobs are never lost. Think of what you would be making if you went to work for the state of California in such a... I love when you read that they had to increase their salaries to keep them from going for a job in the private sector. Don't you love reading that? When there are no jobs... The academics used to use that for years, that we must raise their salaries at the universities in order to make sure they don't take a job in the private sector. How many professors do you think would be hired by the private sector if 50% of them were fired?
Probably none of them.
None of them. They're not necessary. Thank you for calling the show. Look, push is coming to shove. You heard that they cut back COLA payments on Social Security, so already the seniors went nuts. Oh, I guess they can't go gambling to Atlantic City. No COLA payments. The cup and the cigarette will be... They can't make one less trip to an Indian casino? What are you talking about? One less trip to an Indian casino, one less trip to Las Vegas, one less trip to Atlantic City. That's all. They're already screaming they're starving to death. They're all starving to death because they cut a COLA payment. And the next big thing are the pensions, the insupportable pensions. And I'm sorry, I'm going to step on a lot of toes now. And many of you are my supporters, but I got to tell you, the pensions that you have acquired are unsupportable. They're unsustainable. And there's going to have to be a cutback to the extent of probably 50% of pensions are going to have to be cut in half by 50%. That's what's going to have to happen in this country in order for the country to survive. That starts from the top down. That starts with the senators. That starts with the Congress. Cut their pensions by 50% and work your way down. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Okay, here we are. Cogito ergo sum. Je pense donc je suis. I learned that in college. Remember Descartes? We had to read it in French. Je pense donc je suis, meaning I think, therefore I am. And this goes back to people wondering if they exist. If you wonder whether or not you exist, and some people drift in and out of that concept, am I real? Am I real? What's real? Well, he said back in the 1600s when he wrote this, that if someone is wondering whether or not they exist, that is in and of itself proof that they do exist, because there's an I who is doing the thinking. I remember when I first read that in college, how great it was. Now, I've changed that from I think, therefore I am, to I speak, therefore I am. And you could put that down in the record books. Not from je pense donc je suis, but I speak, therefore I am. That's my discourse on method in the year 2009. And if you want to talk about cogito ergo sum with somebody else, try that on the wall banger. I think he'd be able to elucidate that with some greater deliberance than I could. Or you know, the golfer may know a little bit more of French or Latin than I do, or even the hemorrhoid could. They could have picked it up along the way. I just don't know. You know, ac prondi hac cognito ego cogito ergo sum. And I'm not trying to sound like a big shot because I don't speak Latin. I only speak botanical Latin. But the fact of the matter is, if you've ever had that one of those moments of doubt of whether you exist, just by questioning whether you exist or not means you exist. But for me, of course, that's not good enough. If I'm on the microphone, I speak, therefore I am. In other words, I exist when I speak, which is why I love talk radio, and I guess why I'll never leave it. So God gives me the strength to do this, I'll do it. As difficult as it is these days, and it's been very difficult these days since May 5th, I've had some of the most difficult days of my life. And I got to tell you today, I'm learning how to deal with this, you know, problem of David and Goliath. You know, it isn't easy being David with Goliath clomping around. Today I was on my bicycle, as I usually am most days. So I don't know what it was. I was pushing my bicycle across a crosswalk, and a truck went by. A guy stopped, and he let me pass. I usually say thank you. You know, I said thank you with a wave. And he yelled out, Mike, I love your show. Michael, I love your show. I'm with you on the England thing. And you know what? It was so it gave me so much enthusiasm to realize that there are people out there who really do listen to the show, who really do hear what's going on in the world around them, who really do know that injustice has been done to an innocent man, and they are on my side. So don't think it doesn't matter. Your mere thinking about me helps. And in about a week or two, when Labor Day is over, I'm going to actually ask you to help me through a letter-writing campaign and an email campaign. We're going to e-blast Congress. We're going to try and get the few honest men and women left in Congress to demand that the British government take my name off the list and do the right thing. And you're going to have a big role in that. Remember, you stopped the Dubai ports deal. You stopped the illegal aliens with the McCain-Kennedy bill to grant amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens. You did that. You do have the power to control your country. Don't be so defeated by Obama and his minions in the press to think that you've lost control of the country. If anything, you've actually seen that you have more power than you did under Bush. If you could see what effect the town halls have had already on derailing, the town hall meetings derailed the plan for socialized medicine that the Democrats wanted to impose upon you. The town hall meetings have driven Obama's ratings into the basement, and they're going lower every day. In fact, my belief is that after the polls are taken, after the release of the Lockerbie terrorist and Obama's, I would say, tepid, meek, anemic response to it, I think his poll numbers will drop another 4 to 5 points in this week. By mere fact that he continued to go away on vacation, that he did not take credit for the corruption of Charles Schumer's Cash for Clunkers program, $2 billion burned up, where'd the money go? Who got that money? Why did Schumer want another $2 billion? Who was investigating Schumer? Was it the CIA? Is that why suddenly they released the ACLU on the CIA? You don't see any connections there. I do. I see tremendous political connections because the ACLU has been dying to do this for a couple of months now, but they were held back by the Obamaites. Why suddenly, when Obama went to Martha's Vineyard, was the radical ACLU unleashed on the CIA? What was the CIA about to release on Obama or on Schumer or on the ACLU itself, if anything? We don't know. And the reason we don't know is we don't have a free press anymore. If we still had a vigorous investigative press, if we still had a great cadre of investigative reporters who truly were independent, I think these questions would be answered. But we don't. Unfortunately, we don't. By the way, one of the greatest contributors to Pelosi is, again, the Sandler team. They're monster contributors to Nancy Pelosi. John in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, how are you? My comment relates to you're talking about logical thinking. And basically, you're talking about the CIA and who unleashed the ACLU on the CIA. Well, right. Several months back, Nancy Pelosi was called to the carpet about waterboarding, how she said she was never at the meeting when it
was
waterboarding.
That is right. She made herself public the number one enemy of the CIA. It was the CIA versus Pelosi. So you think she pulled the trigger?
Revenge is best served cold. So she disappeared to China shortly thereafter, went on a world tour, and now all of a sudden she comes back and flies under the radar, and now the CIA is under
attack. No, she's a very, very, very powerful woman, perhaps the most powerful woman in the United States of America, and there's no reason to believe that you're wrong. So you have to ask yourself, what did the CIA have on Pelosi that she hates them so much? I mean, it's one thing to be a radical left-wing politician. It's another thing to go after the very defense cells of a nation. Why would she go after the white blood cells of America? Would anyone listening to the show tell me that the vermin in the ACLU are our best defenders? That you would trust the country to these radical lawyers, these perverts, and these drug addicts? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Please visit the website. Visit me on Facebook. Whatever the address is, it's on my website. I speak, therefore I am, every day, 3 hours a day, and that's what it is. That's what it's all about. Any topic comes up, it comes up out of the blue sometimes. Yes, I do research. Yes, I have a staff of 3, 4, 5 people pulling stories. Yes, there are stories I think that are in the news that I like to talk about, but in the midst of it, I will bring things up that are not in the news, such as I did today. I bring new elements to it, such as why today. You hear that the media immediately jumps and says that they put a loaded gun to the terrorist's head. Did they shoot him? No. That they threatened the terrorist's family. So what? So what do you mean they threatened the family? These are people who either were involved with or would actually kill your family. I give a rat's behind whether or not the brave men who had the guts to actually go into an interrogation room with them threatened their family and didn't actually hurt their family. Are you kidding me when we're dealing with the most horrendous people on the planet? I don't think you people live in the real world who would take the side of the ACLU. I think you live in a dreamland. I think that you're either drug addicted or you were raised by very, very sick red diaper doper baby parents. And you are the sum total, the product of a red diaper doper baby upbringing, an RDDB. And right now the country is being run by the RDDBs, the red diaper doper babies. And boy, are we in trouble. The phone number, you know, the website's michaelsavage.com. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage. Warning.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The number one thing I was talking about was immigrants and epidemics. Now, wait a minute. Why would I talk about that? Because I was talking to a friend today whose children have whooping cough, and it got me to thinking about how in the United States over the course of the 20th century, most of the major childhood diseases were wiped out. Whooping cough, measles, tuberculosis. This was a huge victory of science over 1,000 years of diseases and darkness. But over the past few decades, there has been a resurgence in these same diseases. Measles, which was declared eradicated in the year 2000, is now back. Progress against TB has slowed dramatically, and there has been a dramatic increase in the number of cases of whooping cough, over 10,000 cases in 2000 alone. And this doesn't even take the swine flu into account. Now, where did these diseases suddenly resurge from? The rise in these diseases has coincided with a less restrictive immigration policy. The more illegals that come in, the more diseases we get. And while the government might have you believe that this is because fewer people are buying into their vaccine mentality, it just so happens that these diseases are more prevalent amongst foreign-born by a margin of almost 10 to 1. The question is, do we want to protect our children or don't we? Do we want to protect our borders, our language, and our culture, or don't we? Obama is worked up about health care. Next, he's going to try to jam illegals down your throat. But maybe if we shut the borders to disease-ridden illegals, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in now. Remember, your grandparents or great-grandparents had to go through a health screening at Ellis Island before they were allowed into this beautiful country. Take a look at what it's become today. Last summer, I wrote Psychological Nudity, which were all of my radio stories, One-Armed Frank, etc. I'm going to take requests of which story you would like me to read to you of the Michael Savage radio story list, the playlist. Is it My Silent Brother, The Electric Blue Saddle Stitch Pants, Fat Al's Tuna, Nutty Friend at Crazy Mother, Coney Island Wax Figures, Dead Man's Pants, Tippy the Mad Dog, Woodchuck Bill, Happy and Sad Cufflinks, When Pasta Was Spaghetti? Was it First Autopsy? Was it Talking to a Bum About God? Was it Working on Cruise Lines? Was it Love by the Sewer Plant? Was it From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom? Or any of the other favorites? Because they're all in Psychological Nudity, and I'd rather read them to you for a little bit before we get back to politics. I'll read one. Here's one. I Like Walter Cronkite and Purgatory of Manhood by Cyanide. So here's what I wrote. Who did I actually like in mainstream news? Let me just run on this for a minute. I did like Walter Cronkite because he had a deep voice and a mustache. He reminded me of an Italian dentist that I knew in the Bronx. You always had to behave yourself when you were around guys with mustaches like that because they could do weird things to you if you didn't. Cronkite was a very authoritative man, and how he presented the world is how I thought the world was. I might be eating steak and French fries and cherry vanilla ice cream on a TV tray, building up my negative cardiac profile while Dad was working. I'd be watching Cronkite. I had no idea what he was talking about. You see, kids don't really know what the news is, nor does the average adult really pay that much attention. I think we give media people too much power by thinking people really listen to their every word. Every time they put out another fib, I became incensed. Oh, look what they said. Look at the phony poll about Obama. But the fact is that they don't have that much direct influence on the average person. I get excited because I can see what they're doing, but do you? Dad would walk in at 6:30 at night, white from a day in the store. He might just have fought his way home through a snowstorm in his big green DeSoto. And here is his number one son getting fat, watching television, eating steak and cherry vanilla ice cream. He's starving and there's no food for him. I don't have to tell you what flashed through his eyes, my eyes, my mother's eyes, and the dog's eyes. He never thought I'd amount to anything. The arguments we would have, my God. You're ruining the kid. Look what you're doing. You're making him soft. You've got to make a kid hard, he used to yell. Look what you're doing to the kid. You're making him a weakling. He'll never amount to anything. He's soft. Look at him over there eating that steak and ice cream. He was probably starving at that point. He got home with the slush and galoshes, snow over the top, and his worst nightmare came true. His wife was catering to his son. Then I go on. The guy comes back from the hunt, and what's going on in the cave? The woman he is married to is cooking for the child who has done nothing that day but go to school and look at girls. So it was soon thereafter that the whole soft life came to an end. No more ice cream, no steak, no TV trays. I was forced to go into his store's basement on Ludlow Street to clean bronzes. That's the beginning of my purgatory and my manhood. You know, this is very good writing. I was too close to it last year to realize how good this is. This is as good as the... You see why I like The Sopranos? I have a flavor. I'm editorializing now. I'm reading my own book like new. It's good writing because it's simple, basic. I grew up reading real writers like Hemingway, who wrote... See, he was a journalist first, and he taught me to write as succinctly as possible. Then, when I was studying to be a scientist, I learned scientific writing to write scientific papers, and the first rule was succinct, as few words as possible to get your ideas across. Anyone can write long sentences, and the herefore, theretofore, and then... That's not the way to write. So I said, that's the beginning of my purgatory, my manhood. It says it like straight out, you know? I was cast down into the cellar where I used cyanide solution to clean bronze statues of their gorgeous patina. The statues were gorgeous. I learned a lot about art because I stared at them all day long. Now you may say, what do you know about art? Well, I know quality from junk, artistry from fakery. The rest is a matter of taste. Now, let's analyze that line together. Look what I just wrote. What do you know about art? I know quality from junk, artistry from fakery. The rest is a matter of taste. That sentence is succinct, and it says it all. Anyway, so I'll go back to the book. So these figures would come in with a brown or black patina, which is the result of oxidation over time. The patina was sublime. But the Nouveau, who were buying the figures to turn them into lamps, wanted them to glitter like gold. Underneath the patina was the original bronze metal. I'll take that. I'll turn it into a lamp. Mount the thing. Blah, blah, blah. They'd buy it, and a certain number would be left for the weekend that I'd have to clean down in the basement, down into the dirty, horrible, dank dungeon. Filled with huge old wine barrels, a toilet from hell, no mirror on the wall except the shattered shards speckled from the acid that hit it. I'm down there from a young age with a toothbrush scrubbing away at the patina. I don't really know if the cyanide was that bad. If it was, I'd be dead by now, I think. Perhaps it protected me from something. Hey, Dad, explain to me how I can use cyanide, since I understand from basic chemistry that they use cyanide balls at San Quentin. They put a guy in the chair and strap his head over the bucket and the pellets drop in. Then the gas comes up and he's dead in a few seconds. Dad, why would you put me in a basement with cyanide pellets to clean bronzes? Here's the answer now. This is right out of the Bible. I couldn't believe it. Took me 30 years to figure this out. This was a repetition of Abraham and Isaac. You see, Abraham picked up the knife and God said, slay your son. He didn't even ask, my son? You sure you mean my son? Your son, I want him dead. All right, I'm a good guy, I'll kill my son for you. He grabs the kid, grabs him by the neck, like an Islamo-fascist, and is about to cut his throat when God says, wait, I was just kidding, I was only testing you. Now, no one ever talked about what that did to Isaac. The father he trusted suddenly grabs him by the neck and wants to cut his throat. You know, all you hear about is Abraham was so loyal and listened to God. But what did it do to Isaac? It drove him nuts. He never trusted anyone after that. His own father wanted to cut his throat because he was listening to someone in the sky. So now I'm in the basement, and he says to me, you're going to clean bronzes because you're going to become a man. I'm going to make you tough. You got to do something, blah, blah, blah. And you're going to use these pellets. Here's a big barrel of them. I get them from a chemical supply store. You drop them in water, and then you dip in your brush and wash the bronze, and the black comes off, and it looks shiny again. The customer wants the shiny statue for a lamp. So I say to him, how do you know it's not going to kill me? Here's what Abraham says to me. I mean, in the modern-day story, he says, because there's a potassium salt of the cyanide, and a sodium salt of the cyanide. But, here's the kicker. Dad doesn't tell me which one kills and which one dissolves patina, which is exactly why I went into science and medicine and chemistry, to find out whether he was trying to knock me off or not. I'm sorry. This is good writing. I'm sorry. This is good. Nobody else would do this except Louis from the Bowery, the one with the monkey. We get rubber gloves on up to our elbows and drop these white pellets into water, then turn it into a cyanide solution. Then we take the brush and rub the figure until the patina came off the bronze. I'm rubbing. It would take you an hour or two to do each statue. Rub. I'm a kid. I'm rubbing. And what I'm thinking about is where I'm going that night. I'm going out on a date or to hang out with my friends, or I'm going to a movie. Meanwhile, my face would be getting blotched, and I'm rubbing and cleaning in what's like a Dickens basement. So I get into high school chemistry years later, and I told my teacher what I was doing. I was using cyanide balls. My father had a huge chemical supply. It was not used for anything but this. I said to the teacher that I used these cyanide balls for cleaning statues, for cleaning solution. Teacher said, "What? It's poisonous, but don't get worried. There's a sodium cyanide, and there's a potassium cyanide salt. Now, to this day, I don't know which one kills you." If you're a doctor reading this or listening to this on the Savage Nation or a trained scientist, I want you to think about what I'm going to say. Is it possible that inhaling the fumes that didn't kill you outright in some way mitigated against the oxidation of fatty foods powering through my arteries? I have a pet theory that in some way, although it blotched my face, it built up my immunity to something. I know it did. I just don't know what. So that story is found in Psychological Nudity by Michael Savage. Great story. Worthy of a movie. I'll be right back. Savage. Lately, there's been a lot of debate about Obama's underlying political ideology. And, you know, is Obama acting as a communist or something else? Well, you know my feelings on this. Joining us today for his opinions is Dr. Peter Bregan.
Yes, Michael. Lately, there's been considerable discussion about whether Obama is a Marxist or a fascist. Now, he rose to power like a typical Marxist by organizing the poor. Obama's original support was probably strongest among unemployed recipients of government handouts and those leftists and intellectuals who claim to advocate for them. Typical of Marxists, he also expresses both Amerophobia and fervent internationalism. So Obama's sympathies and origins are Marxist, but so far he's mostly redistributing wealth to big corporations. So he's clearly not behaving like a conventional Marxist.
Well, what do you feel are the differences between a communist and a fascist in this case?
Let me start with the similarities. Both Marxists and fascists are statists who favor big government. Both begin with powerful, charismatic leaders who want to run all-powerful central governments. As another similarity, both Marxists and fascists want to destroy the middle class, the owners of small businesses, middle management, professionals, and skilled technicians and workers. Middle-class folks are independent and responsible. They resent the burden of government regulations and taxes. They want the freedom to work hard to improve their own lives and the lives of their children. At least in America, those who see themselves as middle class don't believe in big government and the welfare state. In short, both Marxists and fascists want charismatic leaders to take over the government and to strengthen its power. In order to accomplish this, both Marxists and fascists try to suppress a vigorous middle class. Where Marxists and fascists differ is their publicly declared constituencies or power bases. Fascists tend to locate their power in the wealthy classes, especially in the leaders of large companies and industries. Their goal is to manage the existing economic structure from the top down. This is the surprising and shocking direction that Obama has taken since becoming president.
So you see Obama as changing his political agenda or direction, do you?
Yes, to a limited extent. Obama built his original power base from a Marxist internationalist viewpoint. Now those who claim to advocate for the poor are safely in his pocket. They helped him get into power, and they have no alternative leaders, none whatsoever. From now on, Obama can turn his attention elsewhere, exactly as he's done. Immediately after his election, Obama began to focus on the political establishment and especially on corporate America. He made corporate America into his new constituency and doled out billions to them. Even when they didn't want the money, he forced it on America's companies. In that way, he took control over the economic engine from the top down and made CEOs and their boards afraid of him and dependent upon him.
In your opinion, will Obama turn out to be a Marxist or a fascist or something else?
I think it all depends on what Obama has to do to maintain his power. His long-term goal is that of all status, to use the government to gain as much power and as much control over the nation as possible. We often talk of entitlements in regard to government handouts. There's another kind of entitlement that is key to understanding President Obama. Obama is not driven by ideology as much as by his self-righteous sense of personal entitlement to run the country. Like so many statists, he is less a fascist or a Marxist than a power-seeking opportunist. Like most people who feel entitled to break the rules for their own gain, opportunism is Obama's ideology. When we examine Obama's pronouncements about the need for national health care, we find a shifting series of justifications. Insuring the uninsured, then saving money, then undermining the greedy insurance companies, then taking on the even more greedy and dangerous doctors, and now a morality of caring. Beneath this political pragmatism lies something much more ominous. Obama wants to build a permanent health care bureaucracy as the cutting edge of socialism. Once national health care is set into the political stone of this bureaucracy, America will be transformed forever. Our great bastion of freedom will crumble. Meanwhile, the hope for America remains with the middle class, for those hard-working, responsible people who want a chance to earn a decent living and to take care of their families and communities. Starting with the middle class, Americans must vote Obama and his supporters out of office before it's too late. That brings us to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. You can find me and listen to all these Savage Nation reports and download the transcripts at Bregin.com. That's Bregin.com.
Thanks, Dr. Bregin.
Savage.
Scottish Justice Minister, so-called Kenny McCaskill, who released the Lockerbie bomber to a hero's welcome in Libya, continues to defend his decision. The rage of the entire world hasn't convinced this mentally disordered liberal that he was wrong. Listen.
It is a matter of great regret that Mr. Al-Megrahi was received in such an inappropriate manner. It showed no compassion or sensitivity to the families of the 270 victims of Lockerbie. Assurances had been given by the Libyan government that any return would be dealt with in a low-key and sensitive fashion. Advance notice of my decisions was given to the UK and US governments so that they could seek similar assurances. However, my decision was made following due process and according to the law of Scotland. I stand by the values and laws of Scotland.
And here he tries to excuse his action by saying that the terrorist was going to die anyway.
Scotland will forever remember the crime that has been perpetrated against our people and those from many other lands. The pain and suffering, as I said, will remain forever. Some hurt can never heal. Some scars can never fade. Those who have been bereaved cannot be expected to forget, let alone forgive. But as I said, Mr. Al-Megrahi now faces a sentence imposed by a higher power. It is one that no court in any jurisdiction, in any land, could revoke or overrule. It is terminal, final, and irrevocable. He is going to die.
But you've missed the point, McCaskill. God will impose his judgment either way.
That decision. It is a devolved matter. It's a matter for the Scottish Government. They've taken their decision, and that is the end of the matter.
You have lost sight of the values of your nation. The values of your country demand justice, not appeasement. At least that's what the British Conservative leader David Cameron thinks.
Well, I think this is wrong, and it's the product of some completely nonsensical thinking, in my view. If there's a view that the conviction is in some way unsafe, then the proper process is an appeal and the presentation of new evidence. But if this is about genuine release on compassionate grounds, I think it is wrong. This man was convicted of murdering 270 people. He showed no compassion to them. They weren't allowed to go home and die with their relatives in their own bed. And I think this is a very bad decision.
That's exactly what I've said. At least there are a few sane people left in England. It seems that the issue of race and race relations has been heating up in our nation instead of getting better. As the great conciliator, the great bringer together, the great young man filled with hope said he would do. It seems that the hope was all hype, and it seems that the much-heralded beer summit between the cop and the prof didn't really accomplish anything. It's gotten worse. Joining us now with his view on this is Selwyn Duke.
Hi, Michael. Good to be with you again. Michael, today I want to talk about that story that was washed away with the White House beer, the Henry Louis Gates affair. Now, while Barack Obama took a lot of heat over how he handled it, you know what? I agree with our post-racial president on one thing, when he said that the affair was a teachable moment, and I want to talk about what should be learned. Now, we all know about the Gates story, about how Gates unjustly accused Sergeant James Crowley of racism simply because Crowley was doing his job. But there's a lot more to say about the story. You see, I didn't need the Gates affair to understand Gates and Obama's nature. I knew right away that Gates was yet another one of the president's many, many bigoted men, and I knew that Obama was cut from the same stone. And really, I knew this even before hearing about Obama's most notorious bigoted man, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, and I knew it for a simple reason. You see, the hard, cold truth is that bigotry is the norm among politically liberal black people. Now, many will say, no doubt, that I'm prejudiced for making this generalization, but understand something. Prejudice refers to an unfavorable opinion about a group that has no basis in reality. So, I guess now we have to see if my assertion has this basis. I'll start like this. If you've ever seen the movie Boys in the Hood, you might remember the father character giving a motivational speech about how white people purposely put alcohol in gun stores in South Central LA to kill off blacks. And mind you, this character is portrayed as a voice of reason in the film. Now, this is Hollywood, but it's also art imitating life. It reflects a paranoia that makes large numbers of black people believe that AIDS was created by whites to wipe out blacks. And this paranoia causes many other problems also. For instance, you might remember that story about a public official who had to resign his position because... Then there's the story of Illinoisan David Gonzalez. He lost his job simply because black co-workers didn't like the fact that he was wearing a symbol of his heritage, a Scottish Klan badge. And it didn't matter that it had nothing to do with the KKK.
And the best example is Professor Gates, who was just sure that Sergeant Crowley was a racist police officer.
Yeah, he's a great example, Michael. Well, let's talk about one reason. We've all seen people prejudiced against an individual. It might have been a mother-in-law who just couldn't stand her son's wife, or a person who, after years of marital conflict, was fatally biased against his spouse. And when you hate someone, lasses. And then his trespasses are never innocent mistakes, are they? No. They're the result of evil motives. The thinking is, you know, that's just the kind of thing that scum of the earth would do. And it's no different with politically liberal blacks. Professor Gates, AIDS conspiracy theorists, are just sure that those who offended them are bigoted because, well, that's just what white people do.
Well, also the demonization of whites is part of leftist dogma. Don't you remember Red Diaper Dopa Baby feminist Susan Sontag telling people, quote, that the white race is the cancer of human history 40 years ago? Susan Sontag, an icon of the left, telling people that the white race is the cancer of human history.
For sure, Michael. Heck, I just recently saw a man online who said that he was ashamed to be white. That's what he said. But this raises an important point. If leftist whites feel this anti-white loathing out of a sense of being oppressors, then how much more do leftist blacks who view themselves as the oppressed feel it? Well, you know what? They feel it enough so that another one of the president's bigoted men, Reverend Joseph Lowry, was allowed to pray for a day, quote, when white will embrace what is right, unquote, during Obama's inauguration. Now, next, let's talk about that old political observation about how blacks are actually quite conservative culturally. We saw this just last November when a higher percentage of blacks than whites voted for California's Proposition 8. But now we have to ask, why would such a group vote Democrat 95% of the time? Well, the answer is race. The answer is the idea in the black community that the Republicans are the white party. Look, the fact is that politically liberal blacks are consumed by race. They live and die with it. They eat it and breathe it. For example, consider how black women sometimes say to young black boys, "You're going to grow up to be a strong young black man." Now, this isn't designed simply to reassure the lads that they're not going to end up like Michael Jackson. There's another reason. You see, everyone tends to define some particular status as central to his being. Now, this status should be child of God, but it's usually something else. It could be the identity of father or mother, or it could be policeman, doctor, or athlete. But it could also have to do with one's group. And in the case of politically liberal blacks, they identify so closely with their race that there simply isn't much separation between them and it. And this is why Congressman Sheila Jackson Lee once said during a House discussion, listen to this, quote, "I came here as a slave. I now want the right to vote."
She said she came here as a slave? Is the woman 175 years old?
No, Michael, but her attitude isn't unusual. Listen, it's like the time a black student framed an argument by saying to me, quote, "There was a time when you and I couldn't drink out of the same water fountain." Well, guess what? This kid was about 16 years old. Now, it's not that these folks had a Shirley MacLaine vision of a past life, I can assure you. It's that group identification. In their minds, I am the group. The group is me. Anything that has happened to the group has happened to me, and any characterization of the group is a characterization of me. And this is, by the way, one reason why people who group identify can't tolerate any criticism of their group. Their self-image is so intertwined with the image of the group that anything diminishing the group diminishes them in their own eyes. And this is why such people will jump through hoops to rationalize away unflattering facts about their groups. And it sheds light on why Obama can say that blacks get stopped by law enforcement disproportionately while ignoring the reason for it. They commit crimes disproportionately. You see, the black person who has amalgamated group and self can't acknowledge this fact because, in his mind, it would be tantamount to saying that he was criminally inclined. It would make him feel like less as a person. Now, of course, this is a hang-up, and there's a funny thing about hang-ups. We usually don't recognize our hang-ups as hang-ups, do we? We don't realize that our hang-ups are just that. Things that seem all-important because they're blown out of proportion in our own minds. Instead, we think they really are all-important. And here's the point. Because we believe this, we assume other people have recognized their importance as well and also make them a priority. In other words, blacks who place race at the center of their being will assume that whites would, recognizing the importance of this factor, also do the same thing. And this explains a lot. It explains why a black man who hears a white guy utter a word that sounds vaguely like a racial epithet or who is asked to step out of his home by a white cop reads bigoted motives into the situations. Okay, now one last thing. Add to this how many blacks are raised hearing people like Jeremiah Wright demonize white people, and it explains something else. We've all heard the shtick about how only whites can be racist, right? Well, this perspective makes sense if you view the object of your hatred as truly evil, because then, in your eyes, your feelings aren't actually prejudice, are they? They can't be because you'll view them as having a basis in reality. I mean, you've a right to hate evil, right? So, who really is prejudiced? Who really has drawn conclusions that have no basis in reality? If I'm wrong in what I've said, then sure, perhaps it's me. But if I'm right, then I've just explained for you the Gateses, Lowrys, and Wrights of the world. And the Obamas. If I'm right, it means we've put someone who's hung up, and perhaps hateful, in the White House. Michael, thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
Thoughtful article, Selwyn. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Go to michaelsavage.com. If you missed it last week, you're going to see it this week. A new defamation letter to the British government. Now look, let's back up for a minute. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown was behind releasing the Lockerbie bomber. Okay, there's a letter from Muhammad Gaddafi thanking his friend Prime Minister Brown, saying thank you for releasing him on Ramadan. But the same Gordon Brown is the man who put Michael Savage on a list of real terrorists and real murderers, and I'm only a talk show host. Now, how do you put two and two together? How do you put two and two together? They release an actual murderer who masterminded the killing of over 200 people, but they refuse to release Michael Savage, even though their own emails say that Michael Savage has never encouraged violence and that it would be good to put his name on the list because it will balance who was on the list. Don't you see this is coming from Saudi Arabia or another Arab country? And that's why I was quoted in the Washington Times on michaelsavage.com, where I say we are ripe for the loss of our freedom. Read it. Also on michaelsavage.com from the Washington Examiner, Obama's Veterans Administration pulls the so-called death book from their website. You will not believe this. It's a controversial, discontinued, 53-page pamphlet on end-of-life issues for wounded soldiers, which sort of encourages them to kill themselves. That's correct. There is a death book that Obama has finally had to pull. It encouraged veterans in wheelchairs to think about whether they'd be better off dead or alive. Well, after all, a soldier in a wheelchair is nothing but a drain on the economy. Just ask Rahm Emanuel's brother. Also on michaelsavage.com, why are Americans mad? It's big government, stupid. Don't miss this story. You know the photographer you may have heard about, Annie Leibovitz, the great famous photographer? Well, she's the photographer of the stars, and she faces ruin because she overspent. But what you don't know is that her lover, who died years ago, Susan Sontag, once called white people a cancer on the human race. That gives you some idea of what liberals are all about. My question is, will Bernie Madoff be released to Scotland? It turns out that he's dying of cancer. Well, perhaps Obama will give him a compassionate, merciful early release, and Scotland will take him in. I think he should be sent to Libya. And for those of you who think that the immigrants that are coming in are all sacred and they know more than you do because you're merely a white person who has some primitive notion of religion through God, Cambodian village worships a cow with reptilian skin. Incredible. And by the way, Maxine Waters, you know that character, don't you? She calls opponents of socialized hacker attack on the Savage website. Could the Brits have done it? Well, I don't know, because over the weekend my website was hacked by unknown individuals. MichaelSavage.com was inaccessible to listeners and fans as a result of this attack. And while it's impossible to tell exactly where this attack came from, I want you to keep in mind it could have originated in any part of the world. It's very interesting, though, that this attack should come just hours after the release of the Lockerbie bomber, the terrorist Al Maghri, by the Scottish and British governments. Now, the question arises, who would have the motivation to shut down MichaelSavage.com? Who wants Michael Savage to stop attacking the British government when his radio show now reaches an international audience? Who would have the resources to carry out such an attack? It may not be possible to prove who was involved, but I have a simple question for you doubting Thomases. Is it not possible that the British government carried out the cyber attack? Or is this something that they would never stoop to? Well, I'll let the Savage Nation decide. They release the Lockerbie bomber, but they imprison Michael Savage. And now the media with the Michael Jackson circus again. Why? Well, just when Obama's poll numbers have reached an all-time low, just as real Americans are shouting out the loudest against the advancement of socialist medicine and czars and whatnot, just when the left-wing in this country seem to be on the defensive, bingo. The left-wing media comes to their rescue. Today, in a clear attempt to silence arguments against Obamacare, the lowlifes in the media have decided to cover nothing but the fact that Michael Jackson's death has been declared a homicide. Do I care? You know, I will bit. because I do know how to relax. When I do go out, I know how to relax when I go out. And it's very rare. Maybe once a week I'll go out and, you know, I sit and relax. I have a bottle of wine. Actually, I'm drinking wine again. If you want to talk about alcohol, I mean, it leaves me with a hangover, but it feels good going down. Isn't that interesting? Why does wine, no matter what I drink, leave me with a hangover, but beer or vodka doesn't? It's an interesting phenomenon. I know the answer. It's the complexities, the fusel oils in wine. No matter what you get today, it's been tricked up in the winemaker's chemistry laboratory. They're not making wine the way. It's all like chemicals now, chemistry. But I had, Friday night after the show, I went over to Aliotta's. I hadn't been there in a while. And Richie prepared for me himself. He went in the kitchen. I mean, it's one of the busiest kitchens he ever seen. I remember when I was a kid, there was a restaurant in New York called Mama Leone's. And they used to turn out, I don't know, thousands of meals a night or something like that. And I used to marvel at it. I once read a book about how in the heck could anyone cook. So I try to cook a meal for a couple of people, and to get the bread and the meal and the everything on the table at once is very hard. So how do you do it for hundreds of people at a time over and over again? So every time I go in the kitchen of a very busy restaurant, I'm always awed by it, frankly, because it's amazing the skill it takes to produce everything to come out on time. So I ordered mussels marinara, which I got to tell you, there's no better mussels marinara in the world that I've tried than in that restaurant, Aliotta's. You say, well, why am I talking about it? Because I'm sick and tired of talking about the ACLU. I'm sick and tired of telling you what Obama's doing to America. I'm sick and tired of talking to myself and nobody else about being banned in Britain. I'm sick of telling you to go buy Banned in Britain. You know what? Don't buy the book. Do buy the book. It's not going to change, you know, my life one way or the other. I want you to read Banned in Britain so that you can see the story, the modern-day story of David versus Goliath. And I don't know how this ends. Don't you understand it's not over yet? Don't you understand that the story isn't over? It's an ongoing story. It's a work in progress. That's what I'm saying to you. And by buying the book and by owning the book, you're a part of this history. So I can only sustain this for so long.
Savage.